Thank you. Chapter entitled The Dynasty of Maharaj Nini, text number 3. Nimis chalam idam vidvan,
Nimis chalam idam vidvan,
Satram mara batatman,
Satram mara batatman,
Edvidbira parishtavan. List of names, personalities, who we don't know. And therefore, yesterday, the lecture was in the 12th chapter on text number 7, and today we're almost one chapter ahead. So there are many verses that have been skipped because there was no purport. I would suggest that that's the case normally. Don't go into the next chapter, that's too much. That gets rasabas, because each chapter deals with a different theme here, that's too much. So if there's no purport, close the end of the chapter, I would say. Anyway, we'll continue then with reading the verses from the previous chapter, chapter number 12, text 7. From Maru was born a son named Prasushruta. From Prasushruta came Sandi, from Sandi came Amarsan, and from Amarsan a son named Mahaswan, from Mahaswan Vishwabahu took birth. From Vishwabahu came a son named Prasenajit. From Prasenajit came Taksak, and from Taksak came Vriyadbala, who was killed in a fight by your father. All these kings in the dynasty of Ikswaku passed away. Now please listen as I describe the kings who will be born in the future. From Vriyadbala will come Vriyadrama. So just note that we begin to speak about the future, kings that have not yet born. That's Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is Trigalagya, it's sort of, it predicts the future also. That's the amazing thing of Bhagavatam. It also gives a description of Kali Yuga, although Kali Yuga is not there, and it even describes certain kings that are appearing in Kali Yuga, like the Maurya dynasty, which is like a very famous dynasty in the history of India, is predicted in Srimad Bhagavatam. Western scholars who are skeptical are therefore thinking like, well, then in dating the Bhagavatam, then the Bhagavatam cannot be very old, because otherwise how could it have described the Maurya dynasty? And in this way they have tried to make Bhagavatam a modern scripture. But that doesn't really work very well, because Bhagavatam is also mentioned in other Puranas, such as the Matsya Purana and so on, which are recognized as very old. So in this way, in the dating of Bhagavatam, it's still old, and it predicts the future. Just a footnote. The son of Vriyadrana will be Urukriya, who will have a son named Vatsavrida. Vatsavrida will have a son named Prativyoma, and Prativyoma will have a son named Bhanu, from whom Divika, a great commander of soldiers, will take birth. Thereafter from Divaka will come a son named Sahadev, and from Sahadev a great hero named Briyadasva, and from Briyadasva will come Banuman, and from Banuman Pratikasva, and the son of Pratikasva will be Supratika, and thereafter from Supratika will come Marudeva, from Marudeva Sunaksatra, from Sunaksatra Puskar, and from Puskar Antariksha, the son of Antariksha will be Sutapa, and his son will be Amitrajit. From Amitrajit will come a son named Briyadraj, from Briyadraj will come Bari, and from Bari will come Kritanjaya. The son of Kritanjaya will be known as Rananjaya, and from him will come a son named Sanjaya. From Sanjaya will come Sakya, from Sakya will come Sudoda, from Sudoda will come Langala, from Langala will come Prasenajit, and from Prasenajit will be Sudraka, from Sudraka will come Ranaka, from Ranaka will come Surat, and from Surat will come Sumitra, ending the dynasty. It was a long dynasty. These chapters in Bhagavatam, long list of names, the tendency may be to skip them. But we understand that this is the dynasty of Maharaj Ikshvaku. It is the dynasty in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as when someone becomes a devotee, then we automatically look at the parents also in a different way. We try to find the devotee in the parents. Of course, it doesn't always apply Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu, but still, many times it does. Many times you do see that if there are, if someone is a devotee, that the qualities, that some devotional qualities are also there within the parents. It can be found many times. what to speak in ancient times. We find an interesting reference in that regards to the description of King Anga, who had a son named Vena. And Vena was very cruel. Vena, even as a kid, while playing with other kids, kids are always playing games where they kill each other. The only thing with Vena was that he really killed the other children. So you can imagine that no one wanted to play with him anymore. It became problematic. Vena was therefore known as quite cruel. Still, his father actually was kind of dissatisfied with such a son and decided family life is not really what it's all about. And therefore, he decided to go into the forest and just thought, the material world, you can never fix it, and there's no point in trying. It is something like an ambassador car in India. There's no hope that this car will ever be fixed. There's always something broken. So material life is like that. There's always something broken about it. Anyway, so Maharaj Anga left and focused himself on the Supreme Lord and forgot about anything else. The local brahmanas, though, were concerned about the well-being of the state and put Vena on the throne, which became a disturbance when Vena wanted to stop sacrifice. Vena became proud and decided that there was no need for sacrifice anymore. And therefore, it became impossible. And at one point it came to a confrontation between the brahmanas and Vena. And the brahmanas, who were quite powerful in those days, not just selling bidis and these kind of things as you may find today, amongst some of those who wear a thread. But actually, brahmanas with true brahma tejas, due to their purity, they have power. These brahmanas, just by curse, killed Vena. Then, what to do? Who would rule the kingdom? So, there, by some process, nobody knows what it was, but they churned the thighs of the dead body, and somehow or another from there distracted all sinful reactions, and then subsequently churned again and pulled out Prithu, right, Maharaj, who was a partial incarnation of the Lord. So in that particular chapter of the fourth canto, the principle of Amogha Virya is addressed. And this Amogha Virya means that within the semen of a particular, or in the seminal line, in the line by birth, there is some continuation of amogha, of spotlessness. So because Anga was coming from a great dynasty, and because his somehow or other his son was not pious, but still, the piety of the dynasty had to be there somewhere, so that the sages uncovered it again and brought it out in the form of Prithu. So we speak out strongly against Brahminical qualification by birth. We quote verses like Yasya Yalaksanam Puttam Pumsam Vinali Vyanjikam Yad Anyatrati Drishtyedya Tattenai said. Which basically means that no one can be classified as a Brahmin, as a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Sudra by birth. No one. But rather, yasya laksanam. Yasya laksanam praktam. Praktam prakta, whatever one will attain, the quality, the laksan, that one has attained. That is the point. So by quality, one is classified, not just by birth. So this is a very big thing, because Vedic culture has been broken by this imposed caste system, where people begin to claim birthright for the higher castes and subject other people. In South India, Sudras, whenever they had to do some service in a Brahminical area, like cleaning up the garbage and all such kind of things, or bringing supplies, they had to carry a bell and ring the bell so that the Brahmana could quickly make sure he would go into the house so that the shadow of the Sudra wouldn't touch him. Because, you know, then he would have to fast and take bath and purify himself from such terrible contamination. One said, well, where does all of this come from? Well, some of it is found in the Dharma Shastras. Even in the Manu Samhita, there are some references to this effect, where it is stated that Brahmana must fast and prepare himself for reading the Vedas, and then if he just sees a sutra, he has to start all over. In this age, the sutras would certainly pop up in front of his window. To bed, you know. No dinner tonight. So we could see that in this age, this Varnashram, this caste system had no chance of survival. No chance of survival. Yes, in the Vedic culture, a person was qualified by quality and not by birth. Still, it wasn't exactly like it's nowadays in school, you know, where you have to test everyone and test again to see like what profession is suitable for me, and like they test you and you think like, oh God, I don't know, I have no idea, what am I supposed to do? Oh my God, and what's the test saying? I don't know. I mean, no idea. What would you like to do? I'm totally bewildered. That's many times the case. And then they choose something strange, you know, that a few years later you think, why in the world did I choose this, you know, marine biology or something, you know. As Prabhupada said, poor frogs. So it wasn't that a Brahmin would just take his son and put him through a whole lot of tests to see, is he really a Brahmin or what is he, you know, like, is he? No, a Brahmin was naturally trying to train his son as a Brahmana. Right? I mean, it was natural that a Brahmana had the knowledge to train his son as a Brahmana. Carpenters were usually trying to train their sons as carpenters, but if it didn't work, then they considered that, well, maybe he fits somewhere else. And then one was accepted. Say, this is what the Hare Krishna movement says. You know? And of course they say that because that's in their favor. You know, these people, they all come from a low background, right? And they don't mind sporting around with Brahmin threads and just claim, you know, that anybody can become a Brahmin. Yes, it's natural that they will claim so. But of course, we have a few good personalities on our side. Because no one in the so-called Hindu culture would ever dare to speak out against the authority of Narada Muni. They would do that, you're finished. You know, I mean, Narada is universally accepted. And well, he was definitely the son of a Sudrani, the son of a maidservant. Pretty low birth. So like that, there are Vedic references, Puranic references to various personalities who came from a non-Brahminical background and who were lifted to the highest status. And Narada Muni is the spiritual master of Vyas. He becomes like the spiritual master of Vyas, who is the writer of the Vedas.
So all the Brahmanas are just like reciting the Vedas. Vedas, and it's like after your birth in Brahminical family to recite the Vedas.
Okay, very good. And who wrote the Vedas? Vyas. And who was his guru? Narada Muni. And in what kind of family did he appear? Oh. It's quite good, actually. You've got a watertight case. Just a little bit about these dynasties. So, but on the other hand, obviously, if one grows up in a family where they have followed samskaras, the parents have lived a very pure life at the time of conception, they were in a pure state of consciousness, then the child that is born may be different than the child that takes birth from a couple that was drunk and conceived their kid in the back of the car on Saturday night. It could be that the Saturday night child would be of a different caliber. It could be. If you think about it. So therefore, we do appreciate that there can be a continuation of noble souls take their birth in an exalted family, one after another, and that there is such a thing as pious families and such a thing as impious families, naturally. And it's like, you know, if you grow up and your father uses you as a football, then there's a good chance that as you grow up, you too will have a tendency towards those kind of sports. Kick wife and kids around. Shut up. So therefore, when we're discussing these dynasties, we're actually discussing very great exalted personalities. So you may say, yes, all right, very nice, but we don't know anything about them. So do we really have to go through this whole list of names? Yes, because each name that is read out is a blessing upon us. Each name is purifying us, because with each name we're invoking the blessings of that great soul. So therefore it's very good to read out all these names. And on that note, I'll read you a few more. So we're going now to the ninth chapter, and there is a huge introduction to the chapter, a summary of the chapter, which this time I'm not going to read. Usually we do, actually, you know, if there's no purport, we just read that. And we read that whole chapter summary, because usually there's a lot of stuff in there. We speak on that. But today we will not. And we're going to read names. Text number 1 of chapter 13. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, after beginning sacrifices, Maharaj Nimi, the son of Ikshvaku, requested the great sage Vasistha to take the post of chief priest. At that time, Vasistha replied, my dear Maharaj Nimi, I've already accepted the same post in a sacrifice begun by Lord Indra. I shall return here after finishing the yajna for Indra. Kindly wait for me until then. Maharaj Nimi remained silent, and Vasistha began to perform the sacrifice for Lord Indra. Maharaj Nimi, being a self, realized soul, considered that his life is flickering. Therefore, instead of waiting long for his sister, he began performing the sacrifice with other priests. After completing the sacrificial performance for King Indra, the spiritual master of Vasistha returned and found that his disciple, Maharaj Nimi, had disobeyed his instructions. Thus, Vasistha cursed him, saying, may the material body of Nimi, who considers himself learned, immediately fall. For unnecessarily cursing him, when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. For the sake of getting contributions from the King of Heaven, he said, you have lost religious intelligence, therefore I pronounce this curse, your body also will fall. After saying this, Maharaj Nimi, who was expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, who was expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, gave up his body. Vasistha, the great-grandfather, gave up his body also, but through the semen discharged by Mitra and Varuna when they saw Arvasi, he was born again. I mean, look at these situations. Right? This, we are here in another yuga, and sometimes when we read Bhagavatam, it takes us back to times that are very different from ours. For example, we read about Priyavrata, and then Priyavrata, he wants to be, he's a brahmachari, wants to stay a brahmachari, and then his grandfather and great-grandfather are coming to tell him that he should get married. It happens to be that his great-grandfather is Lord Brahma and grandfather Swayambhu Manu. So which are sort of like impressive personalities, and then Priyavrata decides to get married, and then, well, you know, once you get married, you naturally get little facilities, so he gets a good car and goes for a spin around the universe with that car and drives to the sky because he, mind you, he doesn't like it that at night the sun goes out. So he decides to drive around himself with an effulgent chariot instead of the sun, keep the sun going all the time. Oh yes, and by the way, while he's driving, the wheels of his chariots, they cut the land mass in 7 pieces, and there we have the continents. Okay, that's Priyavrata for you. Pleased to meet you. If we're looking at his personalities in the Bhagavatam sometimes, which are factual, they are real. They are completely real. There's no fairy tale or anything or mythology about them. But they look like mythological figures. They sure do, and in comparison to us, right? I mean, it's like something definitely superhuman. Bhishma Dev lies on a bed of arrows, you know, hundreds of arrows have pierced his body, and he's totally calm, and he's still able, and he's still alive. And he can speak nicely, he can give a full lecture, and so on. Well, if we have a little cut in our finger, call an ambulance, you know, please, you know. We are like, we get dysfunctional at a slight little thing. So, no way that any of us with hundreds of arrows will be able to imitate Bhishma Dev, even if we tried. Not possible. So, what to speak like Bhima, who is as strong as 10,000 elephants. One man as strong as 10,000 elephants. I mean, come on, what is that, you know? It's like, makes Spider-Man look like a kid, you know? And Spider-Man, mind you, stopped a train, okay? He stopped a train, yeah? It was tough. It took a lot of spider webs, but in the end, just on the edge, as the train was about to go over the bridge into the water, and the top of the train was already hanging over the edge, just then, on the verge, Spider-Man did it. But for Bhima, that would have been kid stuff. You know, he would just stand there with the train and blow it straight off the track. You know, 10,000 elephants. What is that? You know, we're measuring engines in horsepower. I don't think there's any train with 10,000 horsepower, right? And basically, you know, Bhima had an engine of 10,000 elephant power. So just imagine it for a moment. You can see Bhima running on the highway, you know, leaving like James Bond's Aston Martin far behind. In this way, we are like dealing with personalities who are just from an era which is really beyond our imagination. So also, when we are seeing the personalities involved in this particular pastime, it's sort of beyond our level. It is beyond our level. So we must be very careful in when we read the Bhagavatam, that we don't impose our own reality upon the personalities in Bhagavatam, and that we try to make them just as small time as we are. And when we speak about Pandavas, and sometimes you see that in a Hindi movie, you know, you see the Pandavas, and then there goes, you know, one of them goes like, "Hey, Arjun."
"No, I am a Karo."
"Don't do that." And they bring it down to like such a mundane level, you know, like some guys from around the block, you know. And yeah, I mean, God, you know, there's absolutely no culture in them. Right? So we're dealing here with personalities that have deep culture, that not only on the surface, but very, very deep. I mean, these are personalities that appeared way before the time when the sages of Naimisharanya had assembled to ward off the to do a sacrifice to ward off the infants of Kali Yuga, and who heard that in the future people would eat cows. Cannot be. That's those sages were thinking. So we take it back to the to earlier times. They didn't think of things like that. That was inconceivable. In the kingdom of Lord Ramachandra, there was no disease. In the current kingdom, there is no health. And how are your germs today? It's like sometimes I give a lecture that on a Saturday night, when you have like a pounding headache, right? Just realize that the germs are having a party. Right? That's all it is. Because Srila Prabhupada says that all living beings, from the smallest, most insignificant ones, the germs, the bacteria, up to Lord Brahma, all living beings are living for sense gratification. So yes, the germs are also living for sense gratification. So for them, our body is something like Onda. From the perspective of a germ, the body is something like Donda. And it's full of places to party and places to go, and they do. There's a great program going on in the nose, and all are invited. Posters all over, right? And the germs assemble. Anyway, so just imagine. We are here dealing with very exalted saintly personalities. So the whole situation between Vasistha and Mimi, and cursing and counter-cursing, etc., is in one sense inconceivable. We should not take these verses and sort of project them on our situation where we may have a particular case of a person who is dissatisfied in the guru-disciple relationship. Well, let's do a little cursing or something. No, but project all that and pull our doubts from this and take authority from this particular pastime that we should want. We should understand that our doubt was already there before we were born. We were already full of doubt even before we appeared within this world. We are constitutionally one big ball of doubt. Right? as we were conceived, we were full of doubt. As we were attracted within the womb of our parents, we were the epitome of doubt because we were fallen souls who had failed life after life, yuga after yuga, to take advantage of transcendental knowledge, because we were doubtful, skeptical, sinful, degraded, and just stubbornly not ready to surrender. And then we took birth in Kali Yuga, and here we are, full of doubt. Then one day, this pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, sort of presented to us, and it was hard to get around him. Huh? It was really hard. I mean, we tried our normal doubts on him,
but it bounced right off.
It didn't work.
All our cynical possible views, we tested him this way, that way. We couldn't find anything.
Anyway, so here we are, dressed up like Hare Krishnas and full of doubt. Full of doubt. Then we have to, unfortunately, in 1977, it happened. Srila Prabhupada left this planet. So what to do now? Those who have joined after 77, what are they going to do? They can't really have Prabhupada as a guru. Some, of course, still try. But they can't really. And then what, you know? Then who to choose? So, you know, then you can, of course, get one of these books, How to Choose a Guru. You can sort of take some advice. You can go to a website. I saw one website where all the guru pictures are put on one website with their names under it, you know, and a little blurb. Click a guru. there are different ways, you know, you can click. You can just, if you really don't know anymore, you can put on a blind phone. Put the cursor around. That's it. That's one option. So it's not always... Are we really putting our full faith in the relationship from the day we say, yes, now I'll surrender? Or is there still some doubt? I guess if we get very honest, there is still some doubt. And in fact, it takes... is that doubt legitimate? Well... A lot of the doubt is also on the side of the disciple. We are not capable of having faith. We have to learn to give ourselves trust. It's very difficult in this age. Anyway, so of course there may be someone who raises their hand, but what about the genuine doubt? Because there is a list also on the internet with some other website. You know, with all the problems, problems may occur. Doubts in a guru-disciple relationship may arise, but it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything, because no matter what happens, we are still the eternal servant of Krishna. Since it's eternal, we can't change it, no matter what we do. So whatever we do, we're still the servant of Krishna. That's eternal. So therefore, even if a tragedy would happen on the way, it's not going to change our position. And we feel sad, but at the same time, we feel blessed. If a spiritual leader falls down, we feel sad. But we were also blessed when he was in good standing. But how can people fall down? Well, even Brahma fell down. The jiva can fall down. The jiva is prone to fall down. Jamal Yesiatum Ved Itar Vaschates Fabik Sodat Dine Brahmari Daya Dikavi Miyanti Yad Suryaha Teido Vali Medan Yadavi Nimayo Yatapi Sanganis Dham Nasena Sadanyas the Kulukam Satyam Param Vimahi. First verse of Bhagavatam is saying everything comes from Krishna. And Muyanti Yad Suryaha, even the demigods become bewildered by Maya. And then it begins to describe, sometimes we see water on land, water in fire. The nature of the material energy is such that it bewilders the mind. It's very bewildering. So by nature, we have no chance. There is no chance. If it's a fight between us and Maya, we cannot win. There's no way you're gonna win, no matter how strong, how powerful, how pure one may be. You may have taken your birth in India in an acharya family of, in some really exalted gotra, and trace it all back to the Satya Yuga, your family lineage. You may have never even smelled meat this life. The word sin may be unknown to you, but that doesn't matter. Maya will get you, for sure. Because no matter how great anyone is, no one within this universe can have a more exalted birth than Lord Brahma. Because Lord Brahma is the most pious soul within the entire universe. That's why he gets that particular position of Lord Brahma. So no matter how exalted your birth is, it can never be as exalted as the birth of Brahma. He had the best. Right? And still, Maya could even distract Lord Brahma. What's our chance? Fat chance, like a snowball in hell. Oh boy. Yes, what to do? Maya is, see, Maya, she knows unlimited varieties to attract you. And Maya is not only outside, oh no. Maya has already infiltrated within. Maya knows exactly what you think. Maya knows exactly what you like. Maya knows your weakness. That one thing, and she just bounces the opportunity under your nose. Dum, dum, dum. Oh no. Oh no. Oh no. Take it away. Oh no, 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 no. No, no. Take it. This is exactly. What I've always wanted and never got. And now it's here. The throwing potency of Maya. Yes. Take it to play. You're still young. You can always be a devotee tomorrow. Enjoy for a day. Don't be fanatic. Yes, there was a fish swimming in the water, and this fish, it saw this delicious worm, absolutely delicious, fat, juicy looking, the kind of worm of your dreams, right? And, that fish saw that worm, and water dribbled from its mouth, and subsequently the fish was desiring to eat that worm, but was seeing that within the worm at the same time there was a nasty hook. Because a fish is not blind, a fish has eyes, about covering half its body, right? So you can bet that the fish can see, it's like, so the fish saw the hook. And then what did that fish do? Just stupidly bit in that bait? No. The fish was thinking, let me nibble a little bit of the side. Nibble, nibble, nibble. Nothing happened. Hey, I found the secret. This is the way. The way to get your Maya. You just stay safe in Krishna consciousness and then a little flirtation on the side. So this is how we deal. This was the fish. But what the fish didn't calculate, the fish was very careful. Very careful. I'm careful that I don't get too close to the hook. But what the fish didn't consider was that Maya is not just sitting there waiting and puts the opportunities under our nose. No, that Maya is active. And Maya was seeing the floater indicated there is a fish nibbling on the bait. And Maya, being expert fisherman, just with some kind of agile movement of the wrist, that suddenly on the hook again. On the hook again. It's interesting, this how it works.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, so that nibbling tendency is certainly there. That's certainly there. Come on.
Don't be a square. Come on. Take a bite. Come on.
So like this, everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it. You think you're better than everybody else. Be honest, you know. Anyway, like this, we have many justifications to take that little nibble. And then, of course, we are reeled in.
So we must be very careful to avoid these temptations.
Take shelter. Only by very carefully taking shelter can we overcome the material energy, only by taking shelter of Krishna. And that means we can't see Krishna, we don't see him, we see what Krishna left for us, Krishna's temple, Krishna's deity form we're seeing. Of course, that is Krishna, but can we see it? Are we sure? Are we sure that we can see Krishna even when we look at the deity? Is Krishna, but can we see that he's Krishna? Maybe not. Maybe we still partially see stone. So like that, to what extent can we really take shelter of Krishna? We must take shelter of Krishna's instructions, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's devotees. In that way, we must take shelter and shelter and shelter. And that is so difficult. And that is so difficult. Last point to mention is how can one surrender to an authority who is not perfect? Yeah. I mean, this is a big problem, right? I mean, you see it, you know, you see that he's not perfect. See that this authority, he or she has flaws and still is acting as an authority and is telling you what to do. I mean, can you surrender that? Can you? Is that okay? Yes, that's perfectly fine. That's fine. So, but my authority, I mean, recently there was someone who said, well, I'm not going to Bhagavatam class. I'm sorry, I'll only listen to tapes of Prabhupada and my guru, because I don't want to get contaminated by the speakers. I mean, they're not pure devotees, and there are some anarchists there, clearly, and they come through in the class, and then, you know, I get contaminated. No, I'm sorry. I stay in my room, and I just listen to the recordings of Prabhupada and my guru, who's now disappeared. What can I do? Nobody's pure in Islam.
So I will surrender, but only to a pure devotee. So what about that?
No, the system is simple, that there is Krishna. Let me tell a story, and then I'll end up there. You know, there's the story of Maharaj Santanu. It's very interesting. Somehow or other, he got a benediction that he could go to Brahmaloka. He was at Brahmaloka, and then at that time, many sages were there. And somehow or other, Ganga Devi, personified, was also there. A situation came about where Maya arranged something, went, took hold of her sari, and somehow or other exposed her breasts.
All the sages looked down.
But not Maharaj Santanu. He looked up. The result was that he became cursed to go back down and to marry Ganga then. Okay, that happened. So she became his wife, but there was a condition. The condition was that he could never criticize anything she would do. So each year a child was born, and soon after the child was born, she would just go to the river and drown the child in the river. Mum was the word, so he didn't say nothing. Now that's shocking. That's shocking. But that's not everything. That's not everything. What about citizens in the kingdom? Can you imagine? Can you just imagine, you know, Gordon Brown just drowns little child in the river, in the Thames, you know. Pictures are there on the front page, right? What's England going to do? Mothers of England, what are you going to do? Gordon Brown drowns babies, right? A protest march, pull them down with the government, down. I think millions of British mothers would march into Downing Street and would say, down, isn't it? So, naturally, and it didn't happen. It didn't happen. The whole kingdom looked the other way. So what an amazing thing. That's maybe the most amazing thing in the whole story, that the kingdom didn't revolt, that they just accepted it. Why? Because he was the king. And whatever the king decided, the citizens would accept. Just see? But the king was wrong. He's the king. King. So they were accepting the leader. So in a spiritual movement, does it work like that? Imagine you follow a leader and he's not pure, and it's, how can you surrender? Don't worry, because the leader is under control of another leader who is keeping an eye on him, and it gives him leeway, but only so much, within certain parameters. And if it gets outside these parameters, then stop. Now no more. So in this way, on all levels, everyone is under some authority. Everyone gets some leeway. And as it goes up in the pyramid, it narrows down, gets more and more strict, and more transparent to Krishna. Until we see there is no difference, no difference between Srila Prabhupada's level of consciousness and the consciousness of Krishna. Like they are completely aligned, one can say. So this, but everyone's connected. So the essence is to be connected. To be connected under authority and to work within the limits of authority. And then we can come out of Maya. And then for everyone there is a level that fits. So conclusion of this lecture, we're looking today at great personalities from the past. We're praying to them for blessings. We cannot compare ourselves to them. We ourselves are somehow or other also part of it. Sometimes I look at the caravan and I see the caravan in front. Lord Chaitanya, Tarapanchatat for dancing, followed by the six Goswamis, followed by Krishna's Kaviraj, followed by Narottama's Thakur, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Srinivas, so many great personalities. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada, and so on. And here we are. And then us. Then us. Coming from everywhere. Satsarup Maharaj wrote somewhere that Lord Ramachandra was trying to conquer Lanka with an army of monkeys. Prabhupada had to do it with hippies from the lower east side. So anyway, somehow or other we're there. We're in the caravan. We're in the caravan. As long as we keep the connection with the caravan, we're going home. Although in the back of the caravan, you know, the guys may look a little different than, you know, Lord Chaitanya and his associates dancing up front. Okay, that's a given. But but we're in the caravan. So as long as we stay in the caravan, then even we who are not qualified can be successful. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? We want to only serve Guru,
listen to
my own Guru and not to Prabhupada. Well, that's, I guess, you know, we have to be very patient in this movement. Very, very patient and very tolerant. There's a lot of immaturity and it takes time to grow up. You know, I mean, some people, the bodies grow up, but the inside, they're still 5 years old. And what can be done? That's childish. That's childish. Obviously, anyone's guru is a dedicated servant of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is a dedicated servant of his spiritual master. We're all dedicated servants of Srila Rupa Goswami, who is a dedicated servant of Lalita, who is a dedicated servant of Srimati Radharani, who is a dedicated servant of Krishna. That's our sampradaya. So, something not working. What to do? Have another gulab jam. Unfortunately, Prabhupada said this is not a brainwashing movement, it's a brain giving movement. So there is hope. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, Ki
Jai.